It's like this morning, I believe we've got a number of bachelors here this morning, don't we? At least three of them. Hope you all are making out okay. And I appreciate the warmness as we worship this morning, singing together. And it's kind of neat to have you all up close here too. That's kind of neat. But my mind went to two men, Joshua and Caleb. And it wasn't necessarily our Joshua and Caleb, but Joshua and Caleb in the Bible, though I did think about Joshua and Caleb, that we have here in our church. Both of the men in the Bible, they're an inspiration to me in how they responded to life. There's several things that I want to look at in how they responded to life. And while I'm going to focus a little bit more on Joshua, the man who took Moses' place in leading the children of Israel through the land of Canaan after Moses took his turn at it. But I want to begin with Caleb, the representative. He was a representative from the tribe of Judah when there was 12 spies that were sent to spy out the land of Canaan. And Caleb was the representative from the tribe of Judah. And when they came back to report their findings of the land in Numbers 13, I kind of find it interesting that it was Caleb and not Joshua that was the one that spoke up, and he was the one that affirmed that they could take the land. It was Caleb that, and a lot of times we think of Joshua as being the leader, and he was later on, but Caleb was the one that took the lead in this. So as each of the spies were sent, they were handpicked from the tribes, the 12 different tribes, like I said, and these men, they were leaders, they were rulers from within their respective tribes. They were important men. You'll find that in Numbers 13, too. But I want to share with you what got me thinking about Joshua and Caleb and in their responses to life. When we were Christmas caroling this past December, I don't know if you remember or not, when we went to Dominion, there was this old man. If you can imagine how you were standing there, he was on the right-hand side, and Gary pointed him out to me. He said, "That man there," he said, "he's 95 years old." And as I was looking at this man, that he looked more like he was 70 or 75. His countenance, the way he carried himself, the look on his face was a man of at least 20 years younger. At least that's what it seemed like to me. So as we were singing, my mind got to wondering, which I guess it shouldn't have been, but anyhow, I got to wondering about, this man's 90 years old, 95 years old, and that's 40 years older than I am. And I was wondering who's close to 40 years old this morning. And from what I looked on the calendar, I believe it's either Chad or Meredith. I think Meredith might be a little closer, but anyhow, I think those two are probably the, so if you want to picture a span of 40 years, just think of Meredith or Chad. That's about 40 years there. It's a long time to live, really, but you guys aren't old yet. You've got a long time to go yet. And to put it in perspective a little bit, I think, Jason, you're 15, right? Could I get you to stand up? I won't have you stand long. You won't have to do anything. But Jason here is 15 years old. And in 40 years, you're going to be 55 years old. I'll be there in a couple months. And that seems like a long ways off, doesn't it? When 40 years, when you're going to be as old as me. Anyhow, you can sit down now. Okay, so Jason, 15 years old, I'm almost 55 years old. 40 year span is going to be the time period. He's got that amount of years to live till he gets to my age. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to happen in Jason's life. There's going to be a lot of goals that he has that he wants to accomplish yet in life in the next 40 years. There's things that you don't even know yet that you haven't even thought of that you're going to do. You've got your life ahead of you. But it's the same situation with me. I'm 55 years old. This man that we were singing to is 95 years old. I've got 40 years to live, yet the same span that Jason has to live from Jason to me, I've got the same amount of time from my lifespan where I am right now to this old man that was 95 years old. It's kind of sobering, and it's exciting at the same time to think that I've got another 40 years to live, Lord willing. I've always said I wanted to live to be in my 90s. We'll see where that goes. But life is before me. Life is just now beginning for me. I've got a long time ahead of me yet. 40 years is a long time to accomplish more for the Lord, and I realize that. I realize Jason's body is increasing in stamina. It's increasing in strength. While by nature of age, I'm slowly deteriorating, decreasing in strength and that sort of thing. But Lord willing, we both have the same amount of time to reach 55 or 95 respectively. And the question is, what are we going to do with that time, that 40 year period? And for a scripture passage, I'd like for you to turn to Joshua 14, and you'll see real quickly why I chose that section right there. Joshua 14, and I'll begin reading in verse 7, read through verse 12, and then also 14. This is Caleb speaking right here. 40 years old I was when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake his word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old, or 85 years old. And yet, I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore, give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day. For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims, or the giants, were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. Verse 14, Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. So whether you're 15, whether you're 40, like some in our group here, or close to it, whether you're 55, we don't have any 85 years old people here this morning. My mom is in her 80s. But whatever age you are, give me this mountain can still be our cry. Doesn't matter what age we are, that can still be our cry, like Caleb's cry was. Give me this mountain. As we just read, Caleb was 85 years old when he made the statement, give me this mountain. And the scripture that we just read said that Caleb had the strength at 85, as he did when he spied out the land. The Bible says he was 40 years old when he went to spy out the land. So remember that they had been in the wilderness for 40 years, and must have been 40 plus years, because he was 85 at this time when they said that. But we have lots of life left in us to serve God and his kingdom. You know, we have a tendency as we get older, we have a tendency to kind of lay back, kind of let the younger people just do the work. The younger ones tackle the projects. to sit back and enjoy the fruits of our labor, so to speak, the rewards of our hard work. But like I said, I want to say again, we're still young, whether you're 45 or 55. You know, we might have another 40 years to accomplish work for the Lord. And if you're 15 or 25, that work is just, that opportunity is just that much greater to accomplish the work of the Lord. So what's your mountain that you have to conquer in life yet? What mountain do you have to conquer yet? You might not even know what it is yet. But back to Caleb. He stood up to the spies and he gave a passionate short speech that characterizes him. In Numbers 13:30, it says that Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." And I'd like for you to just imagine standing before a crowd, and I don't know how large the crowd was when Caleb was standing before the crowd after the spies had come back. Imagine standing before a crowd of people and voicing an unpopular view. But, you know, Caleb was willing. He was willing to be unpopular to follow what God had commanded. Caleb had a right attitude in this invasion. It was, you know, he was wanting to go in and invade the land of Canaan. And he had the right attitude, and it was simply that he trusted God to give to Israel what he had promised. God had promised this land of Canaan, and he trusted God that God would give it. He had faith. So then when the people refused to listen to Caleb, Joshua and Caleb both, they tore their clothes and they encouraged the people to act on God's promises and to move ahead in faith. But as you know, the people didn't listen. They listened to the 10 other spies. So I think some things that we can learn from Caleb is that it's appropriate to have boldness if it's based on God's promises and God's truths. Actions must follow our words that are said in faith. And Caleb followed up with actions, but it was 40 years later when he followed up with the words, "Give me this mountain." It was 40 years after he had first spied out the land that he said those words. He still had faith in God, and he had not given up. And I think it's interesting that he asked the request of give me this mountain. He asked it to Joshua. Joshua was now the leader. He was one of the other spies, and he had a fellow spy, and he asked the request of Joshua. So even though Joshua didn't utter the phrase, "Give me this mountain," I believe that Joshua had the same spirit, he had the same drive as Caleb did, because like I said, he was one of only two people that didn't die in the wilderness, and he was appointed by God to then lead the children into the land of Canaan. So I'd like to kind of move into Joshua's life a little bit and look at Joshua now. You know, what motivated Joshua? How did he maintain his vitality and his enthusiasm, as well as, you know, what lessons can we pull from Joshua's life and apply for them to us today? So as we look at Joshua now in Numbers 13, verse 8 and 16, it tells us that he was the son of Nun from the tribe of Ephraim. And if you remember, Ephraim was the second child of Joseph, and Joseph's mother was the daughter of an Egyptian priest, and you'll find that in Genesis 46:20. So Joshua came from that tribe, the tribe of Ephraim. And originally, Joshua's name was Hoshea, which means salvation. And then in Numbers 13:16, we read that Moses changed his name to Joshua, which means Jehovah is salvation. So Joshua's name originally wasn't Joshua. We also know that Joshua, like Caleb, he was a ruler of his tribe. He was one of the heads of Israel. And Joshua is first mentioned in the Bible in Exodus 17, verses 8 to 16, where he was the commander of the army of Israel when they fought the Amalekites. And if you remember, that was the story of when There was a battle where Moses stood on the hill. He had his hands raised up to heaven, and he stood there all day long with his hands raised up. And as they got tired, they kind of came down, and then the battle went bad. And then Aaron and Hur, they stood there and they propped his arms up again. And as long as his arms were held high towards God, the battle went in Israel's favor. And anyhow, Joshua was the commander of that army that was fighting at that time. And also, when Moses ascended Mount Sinai to receive the two tablets with the Ten Commandments, he called to Joshua to go with him up onto the mountain, or part of the way up the mountain. From what I read in Exodus 24:13, it's kind of evident that Joshua went part of the way up the mountain. He didn't go the whole way up, I don't think, because it says that, you know, Moses was alone with God at that time. But we know that Joshua returned with Moses to the camp because Joshua told Moses that it sounded like war in the camp as they were coming back down the mountain. They heard some noise and it sounded like war to Joshua, but Moses said, no, he thinks it's singing and it's the sound of music. So after the whole ordeal of where Aaron made a golden calf, the Israelites worshiped the golden calf, Moses, he took the tabernacle then and moved it outside the camp. And while he was, and then he went back to the camp and he left Joshua outside. It says in Exodus 33:11 that Joshua departed not out of the tabernacle. So he stayed with the tabernacle while Moses went back to the camp. So then when Moses was instructed by God to give the reins over to Joshua, Joshua wasn't by any means a new kid on the block. He had been mentored by Moses. He was a leader of the people. He had walked with Moses different places, like during the Ten Commandments. And he was on Moses' radar. He was kind of like an up-and-coming leader among the leaders. And one thing that I think that really helped him immensely was that he stayed in the tabernacle when Moses went back to the congregation of the people. And I believe this helped him develop his character more than we think. I think it really helped develop Joshua's character as he stayed in the tabernacle there close to God. And it would be similar to us as people today, how we need to stay in the Word. We need to stay close to God. And I think it will really affect us as it did Joshua. And like Caleb, I believe the driving force in Joshua's life was God. It was just simply that he stayed close to God. You know, Joshua, he had been in Egypt. He knew firsthand what bondage was. He knew what slavery was. And he emphatically, he didn't want to go back to the land of Egypt. God was his source of direction. And he obeyed God with the simplicity of a child. And I believe with the unselfish and unswerving loyalty of a servant. So what motivates you? You know, as we think about what motivated Joshua, what motivates you? What motivates me? What's the driving force in our life? And I think the driving force in our lives, it should be Christ and Him only. That's what should really motivate us in our lives. You know, we should be pursuing God, God only. When we pursue anything else with intensity and commitment that should be reserved for serving God, then we have idolatry in our hearts. Whenever we pursue anything else with intensity and commitment that should be reserved for serving God. You know, to maintain that motivation to serve Christ for another 40 years or wherever you're at in your life, we have to let Christ be magnified in our bodies. And to live for him and not for ourselves. As Philippians 1, 20 and 21 says, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. That was Paul's motivation in life, and I believe it should be ours also. I'll just read the verse again. So now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. You know, others need to see Christ in our lives. They need to see the real person within us, which is Christ magnified within our life. So, why was Joshua this way? Why was he so motivated? And it reminds me of my old friend B.E. Salih. I called him Brother Salih. He was an old man that's now deceased. He was well into his 80s. And I would visit him from time to time throughout the year. And normally, when I would visit him, if he was sitting in his chair, he would have his Bible open. And he was usually quick to talk about spiritual things. And it was plain to see what he believed. If you would go to his place, you would know that he openly proclaimed what he felt. He had signs different places in his yard. He had tracts laying around, and he, like I said, he was free to share with you. And if he felt it was sin in the world today, he proclaimed that, and he stood on what he believed. Christ was magnified in his life. You could see it in him. And though I didn't agree 100% on everything, that we talked about together, there was an aspect about him that I've always admired, and that was that he stood to his death strong in the Lord and what he believed, and the fact that you could see it in him. That was one thing that I always admired about him. It was real in his life. And I believe some of these characteristics were in Joshua's life. Numbers 32:12 says that Joshua wholly followed the Lord, and we as people also must totally and with entirety serve God with all obedience. In Psalms 119:2, it says, "Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with a whole heart." And Jesus as well commands us in Mark 12, 29 to 31, to love God with all of our hearts, our souls, our mind, and our strength. We're supposed to love him with all of our heart. To love our neighbor as ourselves. And to me, that's a good definition of wholeheartedness. And I'm not sure if that's a word or not, but we'll make it a word. Wholeheartedness. Do we understand? Do we really understand Jesus' words? It's not a suggestion. It's not an option. But Jesus says to love God with all of our hearts, our souls, our mind, and our strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. It's a command from Jesus. And are we really ready to be like Joshua and Caleb, like Jesus, to do that with our whole heart? Joshua and Caleb, I believe, did that. And Jesus obviously did too. Jesus said to love God with all and not part of ourselves. And it's definitely something that we can ask ourselves in the stillness of being alone with God this week, in the tabernacle, so to speak. Like Joshua, we must have courage to stand, to be obedient, to make a decision for the Lord. In Ephesians 6, 13 and 14, it says, and this is relating to the armor of Christ, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore. Joshua, he stood like that at the crossing of the Jordan River, when they defeated Jericho, when they took Ai, and then proceeded to take over the land of Canaan with all their kings and all the cities. And Joshua, he wasn't successful 100% of the time. He messed up just like you and I do at times. When you remember they were defeated at Ai, the first time they attempted to take the city. He learned from this lesson that they must absolutely be obedient to God's commands. There couldn't be any sin in the camp at all. And even though it was Achan that stole the items in the story about Ai when they were disobedient there, you remember the story of Achan, Joshua and everyone else, they felt the consequences of what happened. And the lesson I believe that Joshua learned is in Joshua 7:13, where God said, "There is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the cursed thing from among you. And sometimes I think we're kind of like Achan. We disobey and we think that no one will see or miss what we did. And I guess we could ask the question, is there an accursed thing in your life? Because God does see and he requires 100% from us. Joshua, like Caleb, lived to be an old man. Joshua actually lived to be 110 years old, and he never wavered in his faith and in his life towards God. And in closing, I'd just like to say, may we all be like Caleb, like Joshua, and stand for God. And like Caleb said, give me this mountain. And as Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I pray that we can say that also.